thing.
Well, you're live.
Okay, we're live now?
There you go. Yeah.
Are we alive now?
Yeah.
Well, good, because I'm on the road, folks. I'm coming back down home from Harrison, Arkansas. Had a great meeting up there, and there was a big float parade. Down the major river there. It was very exciting. It was pretty good. They had some pretty good rapids here and there. And your intrepid leader definitely got tipped over in the canoe and trapped under a couple boats at one point, you know, in the logs. But I made it through. I'm still here. But it was an exciting time and a good time. And also, I was dealing with really fine people, Tim Venable, League of the South, and they really have a great bunch of people there, and they loaded up. And I am a Southerner, and I'm also an American, and we have to remember that the Southern leaders of the Confederacy, most of their direct ancestors, their forefathers, fought in the American Revolution. And it's really important that we correct the record a little bit for those people, North and South, who don't really know today because of the controlled media. They don't really know today what our direct ancestors 50, 60, 70 years ago in America knew. There is a reason why in the Hall of Heroes in the United States Congress, in the Capitol building of the United States Congress, in the Hall of Heroes for great American heroes, there stands a statue of Jefferson Davis. Jefferson Davis, the first president of the Confederacy, and a number of other Confederate leaders and officers in that battle. And the reason why that stands there is because people in our Congress years ago understood, after the heat and the wartime fever passed, and in fact decades after, The North and the South recognized almost unanimously that the Southerners weren't traitors, that they were actually fighting. They weren't even fighting technically. It wasn't fighting for slavery. It was fighting for the fundamental right of the people of the South to determine their own government, which is exactly the same principles upon which America was founded. The Declaration of Independence is the founding document of America, and it's important to repeat this and to burn it into the heads of people around the country who have this vitriol against the Confederate flag. I think even Tucker was kind of throwing it under the bus that the Confederacy was wrong. Well, if the Confederacy was wrong because the Confederate flag flew over slavery, at the same time that when Lincoln freed the slaves in the South, he didn't free the slaves in the northern states that had it. The American flag flew over slavery since its beginning. Most good Americans understood that slavery had to end, and that was also understood by the great hero of the South, the spiritual leader of the South, who was Robert E. Lee. And he would have been first president of the South, but they felt they needed his experience on the battlefield because he was a very famous American patriot. He commanded American troops and made great sacrifices for America. He was offered command of the Union Army. But he felt he couldn't fight against his kith and kin in his state. And he believed in the principles of America. And the principles of America, as enshrined by the Declaration of Independence, is that every people has the right to choose their own government and their own political structures. They have that right. That is the very founding principle of America. And by the way, when the Constitution was formed, there was no provision that said when these states came together voluntarily, there was no provision that they could never leave, even if they felt the government went away from their principles. And the people of the South voted in plebiscites across America to create their own society that was more amenable to their way of life, their culture, their values. And again, like I said, Robert E. Lee himself stated many, many times that he was for the institution of slavery to end. And the South didn't was not a typical kind of a revolution or rebellion or treason. They weren't trying to take over the federal government. They weren't trying to impose their will or their issues on all the American people. They were saying, we voted in plebiscites, and by the way, in the South where you had plebiscites, where you had elections where people could vote yea or nay if they wanted independence, Southern independence, they were allowed to vote, and most of those plebiscites were more than 80%. That was probably the most popular, clearly popular revolutions in history, certainly on the American continent. Probably, they all often say in the American Revolution that one-third were for the American Revolution, one-third were supporting staying with Great Britain, and one-third didn't much care. 80% of the South voted for the right for them to create their own government and rule themselves, and they felt that they were being wronged by these powerful industrial interests in the North and West, and that they felt that no choice in terms of preserving their heritage, that they needed to go their own way. They were honorable men. And the truth is that they didn't want war. They asked the government of the United States, petitioned the government many times. They wanted to separate peacefully their states and their people. They wanted to go their own way, which was the fundamental principle of, that America was founded upon. But the truth is the South was paying about two-thirds of the revenue of the federal government. And those northern industrialists who had the real economic power and the northern banking houses, they had the real power in America. And they didn't want to lose that revenue. They you know, and yet the South was far underpopulated than the rest of the country. And they decided they wanted to force the South because they could produce great revenue through the tariffs that they did on the agriculture and other produce of the Southern people, while a lot of the big industries skated by. And it's important for people to understand this fact. This is one more fact that's lost on people and not known by people, because we have a takeover of our media by non-Europeans. Because European Americans, North and South, all loved, even Hillary Clinton, up until this last election. In fact, she was campaigning with American flags on her caravans. Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, think about it. It's crazy, right? Because both North and South respected the South. It wasn't a devotion to slavery at all. It was a devotion to what they felt was their right to be free and independent, as was the principles of America. And it's really important for people to understand this fact. And the truth is, around the world, and I've been in Europe, and it's really amazing to look all over the world, people love the Confederate flag as a symbol of freedom, as a symbol, not a symbol of slavery. Again, the South, you know, had slaves, yes, and the North had slaves, and the American flag flew over slavery. And slavery is something that most Southerners knew. In fact, the leading Southerners all talked about the fact that it had to go. But certainly it wasn't worth a war with a million casualties to force it immediately. By the way, slavery was dissolved in the entire Western Hemisphere, North and South, all legally in all these countries. So it would have happened. It wasn't the idea that slavery was going to always exist. It wasn't that idea. It was the idea that they're going to force all sorts of other laws and regulations that were far more important economically and socially to some of the powerful financial forces that were in existence. And all over the world, people, it's really amazing to see it in Europe and many other countries where they, whenever they have an issue of freedom and independence, they wave the Confederate flag. Now, that flag now is being conflated to an issue of racism or all that kind of stuff, because the South was led by white people. Well, the truth was, the North was led by white people, too. And the North and the South understood that this America was a European tradition. The values of our country, most of the founding fathers of this country, North and South, had genealogy, had literally ancestors who were the sureties, as I do, by the way, sureties of the Magna Carta, the great document of individual rights and freedom and and being able to resist the powers of a despotic king. So this is important to understand, because always they're demonizing our people. And if the South is to be demonized, or the North, or our ancestors be demonized for slavery, then you're going to have to demonize every other race. You're going to have to demonize Attila the Hun and the Asians that invaded Europe and enslaved people. You're going to have to demonize the Muslims that came in from Turkey and Saladins. You've got to demonize the Moors that invaded Spain. And by the way, these were all way before the Crusades. You're going to have to demonize the Aztecs, who literally genocided dozens of other Indian tribes, and you have to demonize all the Indian tribes that eradicated, for instance, the Mound people, the great Indian culture that was wiped out at least 600-700 years before Columbus by other Indians who genocided them. And you have these Mounds all over the South. So it is very disingenuous to say white people are evil because they had slavery. Thomas Jefferson is my favorite founding father. I've read just about everything he wrote that I could find. I read his diaries. I read his letters to on the state of Virginia. I read his books. I read his articles. I've read his speeches as a very young man. And one of the greatest things that I know about Jefferson, is a powerful thing, is that even though Jefferson inherited this system, the slave system, he said it had to end. And he said that the introduction of slaves to the United States of America was the worst thing imaginable, and this posed a great, great threat to the viability and the freedom and the values of America. And so I agree with that. We should have never done that. Hindsight's always 20/20, but it really is important to know that our forefathers were courageous men, both South and North, and that the Confederates who fought had ancestors that fought in the American Revolution, even more of them probably per capita than the North had, believe it or not. If you look at most of the founding fathers of the country, and look at George Washington, our first president, he was a Virginian. I mean, look at Thomas Jefferson. I mean, you can just keep going, folks. They're there. And they really gave us, you know, our Constitution. They gave us our Declaration to a great part. Patrick Henry was one of the biggest leaders. So there was a lot of Southern aspects of this. And to condemn the South really is to do nothing more than condemn America. And by the way, that's exactly what they're doing. We see now a besieging of, you know, beheading of Christopher Columbus statues. We see striking down of even statues of Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln, believe it or not, at the time of his assassination, had a bill by the Republican Party to repatriate all the black people back to Africa. He said they should be free and they should be in their own land without white people ruling over them. And that's what Lincoln proposed. He would be called a big racist, I guess, for that now. But that's what Lincoln did. And his assassination was the only thing was able to put in these radical Republicans in power. But anyway, we had a great, great meeting in Harrison, Arkansas. We had a great float down the river, and we had about, I guess, 15, 20 boats with beautiful Confederate flags on them and League of the South banners and many, many places along the bank. There were big people out, glad to be out of this insane COVID lockdown again, and the river was very, very crowded. And they were cheering their lungs out for us. And I mean, huge groups, like, I remember one side of the river, up the river, we had on the sandbars there, people were having fun, mostly young people, and men and women. And let me tell you, they were just cheering their lungs out for us as we passed with the Confederate flags and the Confederate music blaring and American traditional music. And I tell you something, too, this is very interesting, too, that the ladies there, the young ladies, and there were plenty of beautiful young southern women there, they were yelling positive, and they were screaming loyalty and love just as much as the men were, maybe more so. Women seem to be more passionate. And so this was a great event. Tim did a great job, who's heading up the chapter there, Tim Venable. And really, just it was a great weekend, and it was a very spiritual thing for me to see so many people coming around people are joining left and right to this group. They're joining to all sorts of organizations around the country. And I support all of them that are working because people are understanding, as you know, Dr. Slattery, and the people listening, the people are waking up now to the fact that they're trying to literally wipe us out in this country, folks. This is not an institutional racist country. This is a country of white people. This is an institutional racism, all right? It's an institutional racism to destroy the white race in this nation, to wipe us out, to destroy all of our rights, our liberties, and our very existence. The purpose of immigration, and you can read their people who are leading this, and it's overwhelmingly, by the way, a Jewish-led movement, which is very interesting considering the Jews are probably the most genealogical and racially concerned people on the planet. They have a state which bases their immigration entirely on their race and on their genealogy. Not religion, by the way, folks. You don't have to believe in the Jewish religion, but you got to have a Jewish mother. And they even forbid marriage between a Jew and a non-Jew. I mean, it's amazing. They have segregated schools. You got the same people who run our government that are saying that white people are so racist support the state of Israel, which was created just 50, 60, 70 years ago through ethnic cleansing of the indigenous people, the Palestinian people, both Christians and Muslims, from their own land and their own farms and their own businesses. And you've had nothing but war and horror and terrorism since that time. First against the British when they were establishing it, then against the Palestinians, then against the Syrians and against the Iranians and against the Iraqis. And they brought millions of American lives to harm. We've got a million veterans now who are suffering from these insane Zionist wars. So the irony of this whole process is the most racist tribe on the planet, the most racist group that has organizations fighting for what they call Jewish interests, Jewish heritage, right? They that really have the powerful control over our financial structure, our international banks. They control the fundraising of both the Democratic and Republican Party. These people are the biggest racists on the planet, the biggest supremacists on the planet. Right? And they are actively now trying to destroy the European people who built the magnificent wonders and beauty and freedoms and values of European Christian civilization. Dr. Slattery?
Well,
I hope I came in clear.
I was very upset when on Friday night, was it Friday night or was it, yeah, I guess it would have been Friday night when Tucker launched his broadside on the Confederacy saying that, you know, there's right and wrong. They were wrong. The Union was right. Everybody knows that. I was disappointed by it. But I have my own perspective and, you know, I have relatives who fought on both sides of the war, ancestors, and I've lived in the North. I've lived in the South. I remember, and I think you were there, Dr. Duke, a few years back at a Stormfront conference. Sam Dixon gave a speech, and he was making the case that the South should not have fought the war, that they should have just conducted civil disobedience. He wasn't saying that the South was wrong. I think he's pretty sympathetic to the Southern cause, but that they shouldn't have fought the war. And they should have withheld, you know, tax payments and things like that. I think you could make the case that the North shouldn't have fought the war. They should have just, if the South wants to go their own way, they let them go their own way. Maybe you don't recognize Southern independence, but you don't fight against it. Or maybe you do recognize Southern independence. What did the North gain from that war? You know, if... Let's just say the
hundreds of thousands of men dead and maimed. Hundreds of thousands of men dead and maimed.
Country, the Confederacy had become an independent country. Would you have New York and Chicago and Philadelphia, Minneapolis? Would you have Minneapolis overrun with black rioters right now? I mean, what did the North gain out of that? I think both sides of the war, I mean, there was a historic bargain after the war. There was a historic bargain that we're just going to say, okay, both sides were honorable. We'll put up statues. We'll honor both sides. And I think historic bargains And it was a historic bargain that brought the South back into the country. Southerners tended to be the most patriotic Americans. They tended to join the military at the, you know, highest, you know, they're well overrepresented in the military.
Yeah, totally, totally overrepresented in terms of most people died in the wars of America.
And that's
since
right.
That time.
And most patriotic. You know, I think all the wars that we've fought in have been needless wars. But the fact is that that was a historic bargain. The Southerners have kept up their end of the historic bargain. And, you know, there's value in historic bargain. Frankly, I think both sides were led by people, whether it's Lincoln or Jefferson Davis, who were misleading their respective regions. That they shouldn't have been, neither side should have been fighting a war, that they were both wrong. And that's my perspective. Maybe I'm just like an old hippie anti-war.
I think that's
guy,
a legitimate
I
perspective, doctor. Mm-hmm. I think that's a legitimate sector. And I've, in my older age, you know, when you're young, you know, you raise the banner, you know, and you raise the flag, but you begin to realize that most of the wars, without any question, that we fought as a country, or in historically, especially wars that are supposedly fought against some sort of a tyranny or some sort of bad people, more innocent people were killed by the wars than anything alleged by the bad people. A perfect example is the Iraq War, right? I mean, we were saying Saddam Hussein was gassing his own people. They said, and whether that's true or not, who in the hell knows, because of the control of our government by the Zionists. But the truth is, we know that when we invaded that country, we didn't just, you know, hang and kill Saddam Hussein. A million Iraqis died in that country, just normal people. That we unleashed a civil war in that country. We caused the rise of people like al-Qaeda and radical Islamic movements in response to this insane war based on lies. We have a million veterans who are suffering injuries and not just, you know, life-threatening conditions, PTSD, mental problems, brain injuries. That's in the hundreds of thousands who suffered physical injuries to their brains, traumatic brain injury. And we, you know, so many Americans have suffered, you know, was whatever Saddam Hussein doing or whatever in that country, it wasn't a war for freedom. It was a war for Israel. And this is what we see. I mean, was the First World War was fought just by entangling alliances. That's what I learned in school. Everybody just about learned that until recently. But we always learned that this was crazy because all these countries were tied in. It took one spark, right, with the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand. And when that happened, these countries were drawn to war. Millions of people, probably 35 million people, died in that conflict. People with families, mothers and fathers and sons and daughters and brothers and sisters, and many of them struck down in the bloom of youth, right, in these insane wars. For what? My God! You know, I mean, there was no purpose for that war. And the same thing, and this may be shocking, I know this is the Great War because that's what the Zionist media says, the same thing was true of the Second World War. This is the whole war was fought over the, was alleged to be because of the conflict in Poland. The other so-called possible causes of war was when Germany said, look, we have the Ruhr Valley, which is German. We should be having control of our own country. It's been years since the First World War. We shouldn't be punished for it. That Austria has every legal right to join Germany, which voted 97% to do it. That wasn't any aggression. The Sudetenland was a German part of Czechoslovakia taken from the peace of the Versailles Treaty. Also, you know, they wanted to be united with their own country. And then Poland had the dispute over these ancient cities like Danzig, which was a German city for hundreds of years, right? And for that, we had a war that killed maybe 65-70 million. The figures tend to go up more and more, and injured and damaged hundreds of millions of people. And the communists took half of Europe. We were supposed to be fighting for freedom. I mean, so I'm generally speaking, on the side of peace in terms of war, because as an historian, as a man who understands these things and historical like you do as well, that most times, most of the wars ever fought, especially when they were justified by saying we got to stop the bad guy, most of these wars were just completely wars that caused far more human slavery, you know, suppression, harm than they solved.
Yeah, you know, so right now we really can't avoid addressing the whole Confederacy issue because they're tearing down Confederate monuments, Confederate statues, as they're tearing down everything else, too. You know, they're tearing down Columbus, tearing down, I guess they'll be going for Jefferson if they're not already, Washington for sure, talking about tearing down the Washington Monument even. So we can't avoid addressing it. But, you know, when we address it, if in the current context where blacks and others have been incentivized into going into a complete violent rage over historic injustice and slavery, pointing out that both the North and the South had slavery, or pointing out that that Abraham Lincoln, had he lived, would have been pushing to send blacks back to Africa. I don't know if that's really, like, I mean, that's all true.
Yeah.
But does that just throw fuel on the fire? Now, I think addressing slavery, perhaps we need to address slavery, because it's not as if anybody's for slavery. And I think America, I think the biggest victims of slavery in America, the biggest living victims are the white people. But let me just get to this. If in the United States or in North America, we had slavery from, you know, the 1620s or so up until 1865. And most of the people who became slaves would have come over in the 1700s. Now, there was 400,000 blacks who made that transatlantic voyage, which was obviously, that was certainly the worst and most brutal part of the entire slave experience.
And by the way, that was a Jewish-run enterprise, too. That was the worst part of slavery was that passage, that middle passage, and that was completely dominated by Jews, which they brag about in their own books, folks. We can document that. And read my book, My Awakening in Jewish Supremacism, and you'll find all the documentation you need from major Jewish historians boasting about their role in that trade.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So you had 400,000 blacks come over, you know, arrive on the shores of North America during the era of slavery, during that era. 400,000.
Right.
Now, at the time of the Civil War, were there 4 million slaves or 4 million blacks? I can't remember, because about 20% of the blacks were freed by then.
I think that's about 3 to 4 million, I think.
Yeah, so probably blacks, including freedmen, probably totaled about 4 million. So you had a tenfold increase in the black population during that time. Now, during the 16, 17, 1800s, the vast majority of the world's population were agricultural workers. The Industrial Revolution had only just begun. The vast majority of the population of the planet lived in agriculture, lived on farms. They were slaves in some places. They were serfs. They were peasants.
Right.
And if you look around at the situation for, say, serfs in Russia, peasants in China or India, or let alone Africa, where, I mean, the circumstances for your agricultural person in Africa were abysmal. By certain measures, at least, the situation for black slaves in America, some pretty important measures, were far better than in most other places in the world. So black population under slavery, if it was so cruel and genocidal, it increased by tenfold. Now, the rest of the world population, if you look at the world population in 1650, 500 million. Now, most of the blacks came over here after that. By 1850, 1.2 billion.
So it doubled and a little more than doubled. So it went up, the world population went up by maybe 140%. The black American population went up by 900%. So
I knew you were a good statistician, man. I mean, that you got some good stats there. And then it's hard to argue with the facts on the ground, isn't it? Go ahead. Continue on. This is great.
Far more successful in terms of being able to survive and reproduce than practically any other population on Earth. So they were surviving and reproducing, and that's kind of what life is all about. And in order to survive and reproduce, you got to work. Now, I'm not defending slavery.
And white people worldwide are wait, I'm going to stop you right there and make a point. White people worldwide, including in America, we're dying out. We're becoming a smaller and smaller percentage of the population. And this is a purposeful program by those who are controlling our government, immigration policies, and the other financing of this high birth rates among certain non-white groups because of the way we structured this thing.
That's right. And the thing is, there would be no black American population. It wouldn't exist. The African American population would not exist if it weren't for slavery. Does that mean you have to be for slavery? Of course it doesn't mean you have to be for slavery. But that is how the black American population was born. It was born in that context. And you know something? A lot of other populations have gone through whether it's serfdom, whether it's slavery, whether it's being conquered, it's just that's the way history is. If you go back in anybody's history, you go back enough generations, you're going to find ancestors who were living under, mean conditions, bad conditions. But that's the way our history was. And for blacks, look, you just got to accept it. Your population was born in slavery, and that's really not particularly unique. It's very common. There's all sorts of other populations that have their origins in slavery or serfdom or conquest or whatever else. That's just the way the human history has been. And if you are a descendant of slaves, you're actually very fortunate here in the United States. The descendants of slaves in the United States today have a much higher standard of living than
any black
than
country
most
in
populations.
Africa.
Yeah, and it's been subsidized our entire lives, Dr. Duke. Well, I mean, we've been subsidizing the descendants of slaves massively through not just welfare programs, but through the public education system, through things like Social Security and Medicare, which are designed so that the income groups that are most prevalently black are being subsidized by the income groups that are most heavily white. It's just massive transfer of resources. And black people in the United States don't have – and then, of course, we not even mentioning affirmative action. Black people in the United States don't have a complaint of historic injustice. They don't.
You know, let's go into this a little bit, and let me give you some more stats. And by the way, I know we have a lot of young listeners, and we have older listeners who are often talking to their friends. They call into talk shows. You know, they share emails with each other, and it's important for us to know the facts and figures. That as a historian, I've really studied this, and this can be easily proven and shown, okay? So let's just start. Let's look at slavery and see if this basically constitutes an especially demonic or horrific or terrible morality of white people, okay, as compared to others. Well, first off, slavery has existed in every culture, Asian, black, Indian, every culture of the world, right? But none of those cultures are condemned and said to be horrific, evil people, even though they've had slavery from the beginning of the time up until very recent times. And it was Europeans that actually ended the process. Let's just look at the South again and the North and look at America, right? So this is an important fact, extremely important fact. Okay. During the slave period, listen to this, folks, real clearly. You can document these facts. Less than 2% of Southerners ever owned slaves, any black slaves. 2%, 98% of white people didn't. And in many ways, the slavery, one of the evils of slavery is not only against black people, but it was also against hardworking white people because it would undermine the quality of white craftsmen, laborers, carpenters or whatever, who could be trained by slaves, and it would lessen their worth. And there was a lot of resentment in the South and in places like West Virginia and the mountainous areas where slaves weren't really a benefit, who really objected to, then realized that slavery was hurting their own labor. But okay, 2%, less than 2% in the South, less than 1% for the whole United States of America. So 99% of people in what was America were non-slaveholders. If you go back just a few short years to those 1700s and 1800s that we talked about, 1600s, and you go back and you look at Africa, slavery was ubiquitous across Africa. It mm-hmm. still exists. There are still slave markets in many places in Africa, right? Whether they call it that or not, they sell people. Slavery has always existed, and slavery wasn't as big like a, it wasn't a civilized enterprise, you might say, in terms of, you know, of medical attention and good diet and good housing. You know, it was usually just a few people held by these individuals, and they were horrifically treated. They were starved. They were beaten, you know, constantly. I mean, it was just a horrible issue. Now, I'm not criticizing black people because they had this system, a brutal system of slavery for the centuries. And I used to say this when I would be in a debate at a black university or something, and they said, "What about slavery?" And I said, "Well, look, the truth is that the likelihood of you as a black person having direct ancestors that owned black slaves, exploited black slaves in some ways, or beat them, or hurt them, or oppressed them, or killed them, is exponentially greater than the possibility that a white person has direct ancestors that own slaves. In my ancestry, I've really looked into my ancestry very deeply, and there's no evidence I have a single ancestor in my heritage that owned slaves. I'm not condemning somebody if they got ancestors that owned slaves, but I'm just pointing out that most white people, even in the South, do not have direct ancestors that owned slaves. That's a fact. And it's really fascinating to look at this, yet white people are condemned. None of the Mexicans that are also demonstrating against white people around the country, and they're trying to attack the Alamo right now, none of them are trying to tear down the statues of the Aztecs or tear down the pyramids of the Aztecs, because the Aztecs literally genocided and wiped out at least 18 different Indian tribes that they conquered, enslaved, and murdered, and many of them with human sacrifices. They don't do that, right? The people in southwestern Asia honor Attila the Hun. They have statues to Attila the Hun. The people in far Eastern Europe and beyond in Asia recognize and honor Genghis Khan. I mean, they are, and these were great conquerors, and they were great enslavers. You know, it's like, it's only white people who are supposed to be guilty, and the white people are supposed to feel bad about slavery. And that itself shows you real racism. Because if one people are condemned because they had ancestors, and even a tiny percentage of their ancestors owned slaves of a different race, if they're to be condemned, then just about everybody else has got to be condemned in spades. I hate to use that analogy, but that's like what it is, because there's far more chance. Asians, long before there were colonies in Africa, and long before the slave trade existed, long before that, right, there were invasions of Europe from Northern Africa and from non-European peoples. There were invasions of Europe. There was invasions in Europe from Attila the Hun. There were invasions of Europe from, so many of these invaders from Asia. And they took millions of slaves. They committed unbelievable human rights crimes. But we don't say we hate all Asians because of that, or we don't honor the Asian civilization. We don't say that they should tear down their statues. So the truth is that this myopic view of history is absolutely. And by the way, I'll give you one more detail. The same people that are launching and inspiring the hatred of white people in America and this hatred of white people in Europe and saying, making George Floyd a hero, a guy, a lifelong criminal who hurt a lot of black people, selling drugs to black people and robbing black people and other people, as well as God knows how many white people. But the same people that are doing that, the same people, the same New York Times and ABC, NBC, CBS, which is completely Jewish dominated, the same politicians who are controlled by Jewish money, they never talk about the fact that the slave trade, the worst part of slavery, was completely dominated by Jews. And it was centered in Newport, Rhode Island, and New Haven, Connecticut, were the two biggest historical Jewish communities in America, and the biggest slave trader in on this North American continent was Mr. Aaron Lopez, Portuguese Jew, right? And if you look at the histories of these Jews, in America, there was no group of any group, especially when you even go back to the middle 1800s before the war. And this is from Raphael and many other Jewish historians, I can quote it. They state in the books that 40% of Jewish households, right, in America, 40% own slaves in America. 1% of white households own slaves. 40% of Jewish households, but there's no guilt for Jews in relations with slavery. And their guilt about slavery goes back a lot earlier than the African slavery. It goes back to European slavery. You read an article in the Encyclopedia Britannica years ago by Professor Marcus, the leading Jewish historian. In the Encyclopedia Britannica argument, he talks about the slave of Europeans, right, that existed. And it says that the Jews dominated the commerce of Europe, especially the slave trade. They've been slave traders since they entered Europe, and they've traded millions upon millions and millions of little white boys, little white girls, trading white girls into harems for money. You know, they were the biggest slave traders in the history of the world. They're the world champions of slave trade. But there's nobody in the New York Times saying, man, the Jews should really be ashamed that this tiny percentage of the world's population has been the world champions of the institution, the deplorable institution of slavery. So this is a perfect example. Folks, when they make you to be immoral, when your people have done one fraction of what the Jews have done, but they make Jews to be this moral people, right? That is racism. That is hatred. That is evil. And they are using this to inflame blacks against white people, and they cause more innocent blood. As we've talked about the last few shows, it's good to repeat it as many times as it takes to drive it into you. The United States crime figures for 2018 show, in terms of violent encounters between races, cross-race crimes, 548, almost exactly 548,000 white victims of black blood, black criminality, murder, rape, assault, all these things going on. 548,000 white people hurt by blacks. That's a lot of suffering. And most of these people are innocent victims. And 57,000 or 59,000 blacks who suffered from white violence. So it's just amazing. So the dichotomy of this is so amazing. And by the way, most of those white victims, many of those white victims are like little old ladies in the 80, 90, you know, even some over 100 years old who've been raped, believe it or not, in their home. No old woman or young woman should ever have to endure that insanity, the horror of rape, and being beat, even killed by these black predators. And yes, this exists exponentially by black males against white women rather than reverse. So folks, you have got to gird yourself, if you're European American, and understand that the real hate, the real racism, the real oppression, the real murder that's going on and the violence that's going on across races is not white people hurting black people. It's white people who are the victims of black criminality. Hope that's strong enough.
This idea that whites are unique in conquering other people, or it's just anybody who believes that has absolutely no grounding in history. Because you look at a lot of groups who are very large groups today, maybe not all united in one country, but have a common origin. The Bantus in Africa, for instance, most of the continent, Bantu. The Turks, Turkic people, for all over Central Asia, all the way into Southeastern Europe. The Aztec and Inca people just conquered and conquered. And then, of course, the Mongols. You mentioned Genghis Khan. So conquering the largest empire the world's ever seen, and his descendants, in one form or another, kept control over the bulk of the old world for centuries. So you had in China, the Yuan dynasty lasted a century. The Golden Horde, which lorded over Russia for 2.5 centuries. You had the Mughal Empire in India, the descendants of the Mongols. And they were contemporaneous with the British. So the idea that there's something unique about Europeans when they wound up taking over most of the world. No, that was the course of human history. What is unique about the Europeans is they took over the world in the first half of the 20th century, when they're at the absolute peak of their power. They start outlawing war. They start outlawing conquest. And you look at the United Nations, which was a European project.
They stopped the slave trade between all these non-white countries, stopping ships at risk to themselves, mm-hmm. because they were interested in greater human rights. And one more thing, Doctor.
Yeah, outlawing slavery, outlawing conquest. And
you know something else, Doctor?
And if you want to compare, give up their own empire.
Yeah. And, Doctor, we should make this point, too, in the last couple minutes here, that if you look at the British Empire, for instance, the biggest offender of this, there were other colonies in Africa and other places, it's true that the Indian people should be left to their own devices, and that's all true. But every Indian knows that when the British came to India, the education level vastly increased. The medicine vastly increased. Even certain democratic rights increased. And the British, when it came down to it, even they had a lot of economic interest there, and they spent a fortune building up the Indian economy and everything. They basically let them go. Because they said, okay, they've done well, and then we're going to, now they should rule themselves as we rule ourselves. So if you really look at that fact, that in terms of the world, there's no question that Europeans, certainly there were wrong things that were done, but the Europeans died 1,000 tears for every tear they caused. They healed 1,000 sick for everyone they made sick or harmed. They educated 1,000 for any sort of oppression that they did. The European people really brought civilization and culture, which most people admire in the world, most people like. So if you look at the history of conquering, the Genghis Khan, conquering of Europe, or part of half of Europe, all the way into practically Switzerland, was a very brutal conquest. When the Turks came into the Balkans, they literally castrated hundreds of thousands systematically of young boys to impress into slavery and as warriors and servants, eunuchs and stuff. When you look at the suppression that went on in Moorish Spain, it's unbelievable. And so folks, you have a lot to be proud of as European Americans, and you have a right to live. You have your children have a right to live. Your country has a right to be the way your forefathers created this great nation. And if you really believe in human rights, you wouldn't be on the side of Black Lives Matter. You'd realize that all lives matter and white lives matter. But in this country today, we don't have systematic racism saying Black lives don't matter. The truth is, we have a system today that literally says white lives, white well-being, white history, white heritage, white freedom doesn't matter and is not worthwhile. Thank you so much for being with me, Dr. Slattery.
Yeah, can I make one final point?
In
1651, when Thomas Hobbes published his book Leviathan, he describes human life as nasty, brutish, and short. And it was nasty, brutish, and short for almost everybody around the globe in 1651. After 3.5 centuries of European, well, if you want to call it domination, call it domination. Call it, if you want to call it leadership, call it leadership. Life around the world is not nasty, brutish, and short. It's gotten a lot better, a lot longer, and a lot nicer for the bulk of the people in the world. And that, and the world has Europeans to thank for that.
If you're European American, you shouldn't be ashamed of your heritage. You should be damn proud of it. Folks, that's it. Please go to daviddukes.com and support our efforts. And also put a shout out to the League of the South, a great organization. We're all acting, no matter what the movement is, organization, we're all acting for the idea of freedom and peace and justice for all people, including our own, and we're not going to retreat from that position. Please go to daviddukes.com and support our work, support our efforts, and let's save our country, save our people, and save this world. Love y'all. Be back again tomorrow.
Defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Scientists in England have succeeded in stabilizing the time-honored substance in garlic that destroys harmful bacteria, viruses, molds, yeast, and fungus. This all-natural microbe killer is called Allicin C, and it's now available to you in 100% vegetarian capsules only on the New Earth page at Rents.com. This powerful broad-spectrum antimicrobial agent is harmless to friendly bacteria and has been concentrated to equal an astonishing 35 cloves of garlic in each vegetarian capsule. Think about it. The antibacterial, antiviral strength of 35 odorless cloves of garlic in just one capsule. Allicin C is so effective it even destroys superbug MRSA in test after test. Allicin C is truly an incredible advance in natural medicine. And with the threats of bacterial and viral diseases and pandemics growing, no home should be without it. Learn more and order Allicin C on the New Earth page at Rents.com.
Real people, real stories.
I coughed, and I coughed until I choked 24 hours a day. I couldn't even walk across my floor without literally coughing until I was gassed. So I saw three different pulmonologists, and they could do nothing. Someone had mentioned to me about a product that President Reagan had taken. I ordered it within 1 week. 1 week. My coughing had stopped since I've taken the carnivora. Everyone that would come into our store would say, "What happened? Why are you not coughing?" I told them what I'm doing, and they said, "Well, what's it doing to stop that coughing?" I said, "I can't answer that. It just stopped it."
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other...